Good morning, everyone. Meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries will come to order at 10:03 on Tuesday, March 6th. Members present are Representative Eastman, Representative Tarr, Representative Chenault, and myself, Chair Stutes. We do have a quorum. I'd like to approach the table if you need to pass a note to committee members. Please get the attention of my committee aide, Matt Greening, and he will be happy to accommodate your needs. I'd like to thank Brian Glynn, the Fisheries Committee Secretary, and Ben Manley from the Juno LIO for technical teleconferencing support. Today, the Fisheries Committee will be hearing House Bill 231, the CFEC salary and staff classified service, and House Bill 386, vessels, registration, titles, and derelicts. We have switched the orders of the bills this morning, and first up we have House Bill 386, vessels, registration, titles, derelicts, sponsored by Representative Seaton. For questions, we have available, let me make sure they're all here. We have Linda Bruce, the drafter from Legislative Legal Service. We have Alexi Painter. I don't see him. We have Marla Thompson, director of the Department of Motor Vehicles. We have Ed King, I see, legislative liaison from the Department of Natural Resources. And on behalf of the sponsor, to answer questions, we have Patricia Nickel Zimmerman, staff intern to Representative Paul Seaton. And I see we also have Elizabeth here. Nice to see you. Are you here for testimony or to answer questions? Okay. And do I have you?
I missed the signing sheet, sorry.
Oh, okay. We'll identify you momentarily. We've received no amendments for this bill. We will be hearing public testimony on House Bill 386, but before we do, are there any questions from this committee for the sponsor? Okay. Seeing none, do we have it here yet? No. Seeing none, I will open public testimony on House Bill 386. And I see we have Brian Hawkins of the City of Homer. Mr. Hawkins?
Yeah, good morning. This is Brian Hawkins for the record.
Your affiliation, please, Mr. Hawkins.
Yes, I'm the harbor master for the City of Homer, and I'm the vice president for the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators.
Thank you. Begin your testimony, but before you do, I'd like to welcome Representative Christ Tompkins. Thank you.
The City of Homer supports House Bill 386. And its companion bill in Senate Bill 92. They did so in City Council did so in a resolution in December. I'm also speaking for the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators, who very much supports these efforts for bringing new legislation into the management of derelict vessels in the state of Alaska. That being said, I would stand by for questions through this hearing, if any come up, and I'll just let it stand with that.
Thank you. Thank you. We also have Graham Lance from the U.S. Coast Guard here for any questions, if there might be any. Okay. Is there anyone here that would like to testify on House Bill 386?
We'll
close public testimony. Are there any questions from this committee? Seeing none, as previously stated, this bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee, and I would like to move this bill today. There are four fiscal notes in the member's packet, 2 or 0, but the Department Administration note does not have a fiscal impact. There is a capital fund capitalization note as well that reflects the revenue generated from the new fee structure. Are there any questions regarding that information? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to report House Bill 386-LS-1475-A out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no objections, House Bill 386 is moved from committee, and we will take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Back on record, and I also would like to welcome Representative Newman. Next, we have House Bill 231, CFEC Salary Staff Classified Services. Available for questions, let me see. Oh, what kind of changes? I don't see them on the... Well, I guess our people that were here for questions are not available because they're in finance. We do have, I see Faith Putnam, Commissioner of the CFEC, here, Carol Petterberg. I guess she, yeah, you're it, Faith. we do have one amendment. We did not receive any amendments from any other offices other than our own, so I will move amendment number one.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, and I will ask my committee aide, Matt, to come forward and explain the amendment, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For you, you have amendment number one. And if you flip to your bills, we have on section two on page one, lines 12 through 14, you can see that it says the vacancy of the commission does not impair the authority of a single commissioner to exercise all powers and perform all duties of the commission. That was how we wanted it. But then in section three on page two, line two through line five, you can see that it says, quorum, a single member of the commission constitutes a quorum for the transaction of business, for the performance of duty, or for the exercise of a power of the commission. And that was not our intent. Our intent was strictly, as you can see on the previous page, that they're able to exercise all powers and duties when there's a vacancy. We certainly didn't want a commissioner to be able to adjudicate on something because another commissioner was at lunch or was sick or basically just acting kind of rogue. So we have amendment number one before us, which basically just clarifies that unless there's a vacancy, it adds to that section 3 on page 2 that says unless there's a vacancy on the commission. And it just clarifies that we're only talking about the quorum being 1 when there's a vacancy. And that is the effect of the amendment. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Good explanation. I just want to probably just assure for the record, and I think I know the answer, but I'd just like to put it for the record. So this also still allows the opportunity for somebody who doesn't agree with that recommendation or that decision by that single commissioner that there's an opportunity to go back and have that looked at again or to petition to have that reviewed?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Newman. If it originally starts with the hearing officer, and if somebody disagrees with the hearing officer's decision, it will go to the commissioner. Then the further review would be to the superior court. So that's how it works now, and it just keeps that structure in place. So it's only in the event of a 1-1 tie that it would go, that the decision of the hearing officer would be the decision of the commission. So it just keeps that current structure in place. You still would be able to avail yourself in court if you disagreed with the decision.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from this committee regarding the amendment? Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. Now, I was just looking over the amendment. I think there may be an issue on page 1, lines 13 and 14, with the verbiage in the amendment at lines 14 through 16. I think you're going to run into a grammatical contradiction here, because it is now going to read, if I have this correctly, a vacancy on the commission does not impair the authority of a single commissioner, may exercise all the powers.
Which, through the chair, specifically which part are you looking at in the amendment, Representative?
So this is lines 14 through 16 of the amendment.
I read that as it deletes quorum of commissioners 2 and inserts may.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so that's going to read, a vacancy on the commission does not impair the authority of a single commissioner may exercise. And you may want to look at that from a grammatical perspective.
It says if there is a vacancy on the commission on line 10, and it says does not impair the authority of a single of.
Okay.
I read that a little differently.
Okay. Yeah. No, I see what you're saying.
Are there further questions regarding the amendment? Do you maintain your objection, Representative Tarr?
Madam Chairwoman, I will remove my objection.
Thank you. Seeing no more objections, amendment number 1 is adopted. As previously indicated, this bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee, and I intend to move this bill from committee today as well. I would note that we have 2 letters of support from the United Fishermen of Alaska and the Southeast Fishermen's Alliance. Before we move this bill, are there any further questions or comments? So, Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, just for the record, I realize this bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee, but on the fiscal note from the Department of Fish and Game, Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, they show a actual savings of $124,400. I think that, Madam Chairman, that should actually be about $83,628. And so I just want to make note of that. I don't know if the committee wants to change that fiscal note or if they want to wait till it gets to finance, but there's just a discrepancy there that, unless my math is wrong, should be the correct amount.
I didn't read far enough in my notes, Representative Chenault. It says, I'd like to point out to the, or I'd like to point to the attached fiscal note that shows a cost savings per year starting in fiscal year 19 of 125.
Which component number?
We are looking at
number 471.
Yeah. Excuse me, of $125,500. The governor's office has not updated this fiscal note to the CS because the next stop is the finance committee. The updated fiscal note will still have a cost savings, but the immediate savings will be less due to the changes that kept the chairman at a 27. However, I would note that over the long term, the cost savings will actually be greater due to the elimination of one commissioner in statute.
You were ready for that.
Matt was ready for that.
Well, he should.
Are there
have,
further comments, Madam Representative
Chairman,
Chenault?
It should have been ready. I think we talked about it. So.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Price Tompkins.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I think maybe a question for sponsor staff or CBC, and in looking over the number of initial permit issuance decisions by year, which has long been talked about by this committee and a lot of others, you know, that we're down to just a handful left. I'm interested in the sort of notion of effectively the CBC working itself out of a job and settling this remaining dozen or whatever it is initial permit issuance decisions, and the notion of, you know, a sunset after 3 years or however many years seems reasonable to settle these remaining initial permit issuance decisions, and then the CAVC moving transitioning into a more sort of ongoing annual permit renewal authorization kind of entity, and interested in the agency's perspective on that.
Commissioner Putnam, I believe that might be you.
Yes.
If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Wow, a little large for this witness table, sorry. My name is Fate Putman. I'm the chairman of the CFEC, for the record. Madam Chair, in answer, in response to Representative Christ Thompson's question, there are actually two mandates of the commission. And what the commission has been involved with for the last 35, 45 years is the issuance of initial permits. And what you're referring to is all those initial permits that have been adjudicated over the last 45 years, some of which are still pending in the Superior Court and the Supreme Court. So there are cases still pending that we're working on. There are also, there were 26 cases at the commission that we've been dealing with. 13 of those have been resolved. There are 13 left to be resolved. But there's also another mandate for the commission, and that is to look at optimum number studies for fisheries. That's a clearly a mandate of this commission that hasn't been addressed since, from what I can tell. And optimum numbers is what happens after you establish a fishery and you establish the permits in a fishery. The way that's done is that every fisherman who has a history in the fishery has a right to apply for a permit. So some of those people then appeal, and those are the cases that we're dealing with in the Superior Court and Supreme Court, two of which we've dealt with since I've been there, cases that have been remanded back to the Commission for reconsideration by the Superior Court. But what the Commission hasn't gotten to, well, they've done two of these, but not as many as we should, and that's a question of optimum numbers. How many permits should be in the fishery? Because initially we issued permits based on the number of fishermen who participated. But eventually, a fishery gets so much pressure that you have to analyze through Board of Fish actions, through commissioner closures under sustainable yield, how many permits should actually be in the fishery. That's called an optimum number study. And the commission has only done two of those that I'm aware of. And we have 68 fisheries that we need to look at. So I think that there is an ongoing need for the commission and its independence from the department, from the Board of Fish, and to allow for those kind of decisions to be made by the commission, if that answers your question.
Follow up, Representative Price Tompkins.
Can you speak to the last two optimum number studies? I'm a bit familiar with these, and when they happened, and for what fisheries?
Sure, and I'm picking up my information from the Lawson study, if you're familiar with that, and the legislative audit that was done of the commission. So, you know, I'm trying to remember specifically what they were. I think one was a herring roe fishery in Sitka. I have Dale Kelly behind me, who might be able to help me, my new commissioner, who is quite experienced in with the CFEC and the UFA. She may be able to know specifically which fisheries. There have been two. One of them actually resulted in a buyback, and that's basically where we go in after an optimum number study and reduce the number of permits by voluntary buyback with the fishermen, and they pay for it themselves. There was another optimum study that was done after that. I believe that was never implemented because of the questions of the buyback. So specifically, I think it was a herring fishery in Sitka, and then the other one that was never implemented. And if I'm incorrect, I could find out that and get back to you.
Thank you. Do you need Ms. Kelly to come forward?
Yeah, I'd actually like her to come up and introduce herself.
Ms. Kelly, could you come forward, state your name and identify yourself for the record, please?
Madam Chair, my name is Dale Kelly. I live here in Juneau.
And your affiliation?
I'm Commissioner of Limited Entry Commission.
Thank you.
A follow-up, if I may.
Please.
Yeah, so if more optimum number studies were conducted for different fisheries, Southeast Troll Fishery, Kodiak Seine Fishery, you name it, what would happen? If the commission found a different optimum number than presently exists.
As I explained, and it's clearly laid out in statute, the way that works is a buyback system where we decide the optimum number. Say there's 60 permits in a fishery and we figure the optimum number is 40, then we try to reduce the number down to 40 by buying back the permits of fishermen who are willing voluntarily to do that. And the cost of that is paid by the fishermen. The last buyback we had for Southeast Seine Fishery, we got a loan from the federal government, about $65 million, I believe, and that was used to buy back the permits, some of the permits in that fishery, and then the fishermen paid back that loan to the federal government.
Follow up.
Representative Chris Tompkins.
If the optimum number were found to be greater than the present number of permits in a fishery, what would happen?
I think in that instance, Representative Chris Tompkins should the chair that, of course, then we would offer more permits to people in that fishery. I would assume that's the way that would happen, but I don't think that's really the direction that most fisheries go. As pressure builds on fisheries and the biomasses becomes less and less, all fisheries in the state of Alaska will eventually be limited, in my opinion. That's just a matter of time and a matter of the consequences that we also have to work within the Constitution, sustainable yield, making sure that fisheries are available to everyone, and then we'll also look at the standards that are established through statute and regulations for that process.
Thank you. Just a closing comment, if I may. I mean, I just have a lot of caution with CFEC seen as one of its sort of, I guess, assumed obligations going forward to conduct optimum number studies, given how few have been conducted since fisheries in Alaska were initially limited 30-plus years ago, and the prospect of new permits being issued because CFEC conducts an optimum number study and identifies that more permits than presently exist are, in fact, the optimum number, and that new permits would be issued, you know, 40 years after the fishery has been limited, gives me some caution. So I just want to state that.
Thank you. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I must say I appreciate the opportunity to learn a little bit more. This CFEC has been an issue we've talked about quite a bit, but I'm not quite sure I understand what, you know, we understand that you have lawsuits or cases, but what type of lawsuits? What are they? And maybe while you're going down that road, to Representative Chris Thompson's concern about, you know, these are taking several years to complete.
Sure.
How does that affect that persons involved in those lawsuits? Do they have to keep attorneys on the whole? I have no idea on how, you know, this length of this affects what cases they are. Can we have some type of idea of what happens?
Sure, and I'll answer that, and I'd also like to ask Dale Kelly to also answer it. Well, to give you a general idea of what the CFEC is, it serves as what you might consider a specialized court. So we are an appellate court for lower trials that happen by the hearing officers in our section, our commission. They make a recommendation on a decision that is then appealed to the commissioners, who then make a determination whether the law was followed on access to the fishery, economic situations of the fishermen, and also their history in the fishery. So those decisions are based on facts of how what kind of gear they had and things like that. Those decisions are appealed to the commission. The commission can agree with that decision or remand it back for a hearing or whatever else we decide we need to do. Once we make a decision, our decision can be appealed to the Superior Court, as was explained by Matt Green. Also, then it can be appealed to the Superior Court. In the intervening time when those cases are on appeal, we are required under Supreme Court decision to offer an interim use permit to the fishermen in those fisheries so they continue to fish in a fishery where we have denied them a permit. But as long as they're on appeal, they have the right to continue fishing. This is something that concerns us because that exceeds the optimum level of permits in the fishery, possibly. And in some cases, these interim use permits have been going for 35 years. So that's something we're trying to clean up and get those cases resolved so the interim use permits go away and we can get back to an optimum number study. And there have been 70 cases that have gone to the state Supreme Court from this commission. There are probably hundreds that have gone to the Superior Court and thousands that have been dealt with by the commission. So it gives you an idea of the magnitude of what they've been dealing with up to this point. But as you've probably figured out, there are many. We're down to a very few cases of deciding who gets limited entry permits, and we're trying to resolve those as best we can and get those. Then, of course, they will be appealed because every case has an attorney associated with it because there is lots of money at stake in these fisheries and very important to the fishermen who fish there. And maybe I could turn it over to Dale for just a second if she has any comments on that.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And first of all,
if you would identify yourself for the record again, please.
Sure. Dale Kelly, Commissioner, Limited Entry Commission. I am, as much as I know about limited entry, I know that I have a great deal to learn. And my first few days has proven that hypothesis. So anything I say, I'll qualify with, I may have to get back to you later and correct my own record. I think that one of the advantages of limited entry is that they have always tried to lean in support of fishing, because we're a fish-first state, and they've leaned for conservation, and they keep people on the water, and that's evidenced by we have people that are still in the system that are contesting whether or not they should have had a transferable permit back in the 70s, and they've made a career out of the quasi-judicial process at Limited Entry Commission. They've kept claims alive by choice. I mean, it's not just that limited entry is always dragging them along. Some of them have chosen to continue with their claim. They are, with respect to fishermen, I think that one advantage for fishermen of this system is that there's several layers before they actually have to go to court, which would get, I would imagine, far more expensive than dealing with an attorney and limited entry commission. So I think they lean towards trying to assist fishermen through this process and try to find any way possible, really, to keep them fishing if they are worthy of a permit. I hope I got it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's interesting to me to learn a little bit more about what we're talking about here when we do this. I have one more question if we have time.
Follow up, Representative Newman. We have time.
Thank you. When I look at Cook Inlet, and obviously, as this guy from the Mansui, we look at that a lot and the issues that are going on there, and I believe my understanding is that there's normally like 1,200 or so permits that are applied for each year, but about 750 or so that are fished. And the cost of the permit is, I don't know, $75 or $100 or something like that. And I've thought to myself, why is that? And the only conclusion that I can come up with, and I think this is probably a CFEC issue that you deal with, is if you were going to have a buyback, somebody could say that they had longevity in there because they were buying a permit for 30 years, even though they never fished. And when you mention that, that's one of the things you look at. Is that an issue that comes up frequently? I mean, because if somebody's been an active fisherman in your district and out there and he gets his permit, and then somebody's just been buying a permit thinking that someday there's going to be a buyout, well, he's hedging his odds. Am I reading that wrong?
Madam Chair. Newman, I don't think so. In some cases, every case is different. But I think a lot of initial permits were let. I think people hang on to them and fish them sporadically based on market. I mean, it's a really dynamic system. I think when you look at optimum numbers in buyback, one thing that you'll find is that not only do you not want to issue additional permits, you don't want to make the fishery too super exclusive, because our industry is chronically ebbing and flowing, and we've seen that in many fisheries that I've been involved in. So I think people hold on to them for a lot of different reasons, but sometimes they do come and go from the fishery. It's just not a matter of having a latent permit that you're just paying a fee.
Thank you. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chair. So these buyback programs, I just wanted to know a little bit more about how they would work. So where do you set the value of a permit when you're going to buy it back? And if no one is offering to sell back a permit at that price, what happens? Do you raise the price until someone does, or do you have a lottery and somebody loses? How does that work?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, that's a very good question. We do know the value of all permits. That's how we base our fee collection at the end of the season. At 0.4% of the value of the permit, we have economists at the commission who study the sale of permits. They know exactly how much a permit is worth in a particular fishery, and that's how we tax at 0.4%, and that pays for the commission. So we know the value of permits. The motivation to get someone to use the buyback program could fall in many different categories, but I would suggest that most of them would align with the value of the permit. In some cases, there's also valuable upland leases through DNR that also need to be dealt with. So there's those types of buybacks, and there's a bill in the Senate to also do a buyback. So I would suggest that was how it would work. Beyond that, I don't think we can mandate fishermen to sell their permits back to us, but the legislature always retains the right to claim all the permits without compensation. You should be aware of that. The legislature can do that at their discretion, but again, the economics of the situation are that probably would not happen, and so maybe if Dale has any other comments, I would ask Kelly to respond to that. Ms. Kelly.
Oh, Madam Chairman, Representative Eastman, I'm not sure if you really wondered about setting the value. I heard that question. I wasn't sure if you were aware. On a buyback program, fishermen vote whether or not they want to implement a buyback program. So it's not like some voluntary seizure because somebody thinks it's a great idea. And again, I mean, whether or not looking at the optimum numbers, whether or not it's a good thing to further limit or additional permits, I guess what I've seen with limited entry and their thinking over the years and my years with them is that, you know, every one of those permits is a potential job in this state. So it's an important economic development issue as well as conservation.
And follow up?
Follow up. Representative
Thank you. Through the chair. Now, in the case where you are not able to quickly resolve some of these dozen or so outstanding cases, and since they've been going on for a while, that may very well be the case. Do you anticipate shifting focus and starting some of these studies in the near future, or what's the timeline?
Representative Eastman, through the chair. Yes, these cases that we refer to, those 13 cases I am referring to, have been pending within the commission for about 35, some of them 45 years. So these are the more complicated cases that are more difficult and also affect the fisheries all the way up the line. So when a Supreme Court decision is made on a particular issue, it would be, you know, that if we make a decision that's incorrect, that opens up the fishery to all those permit holders who were denied a permit. So Ms. Kelly and I have to make sure that we understand every case that's been decided by the Supreme Court and the Superior Court before we get into picking these cases apart and figuring out exactly why they've been pending. I can tell you it's a very daunting task, and you can see that you've had very good commissioners. Lots of lawyers have served on this. You've had retired judges that have served on this commission, and yet these cases are still pending. So I don't really have a good answer at this point. I've been there 6 weeks or 12 weeks at this point, and so I am in the process of investigating those cases and determining if we can resolve those. There are a number of other issues that were contained in the legislative audit and the Lawson report that we are addressing to streamline the commission, to make it more efficient, to change the computer systems that we use for issuing permits, to go to a multi-year permit possibly, to make the fisheries more efficient and more modern. Right now, the fishermen and fish buyers use, what an embossment on your credit card looks like? There are many fish buyers who are still using that, and they go and hand a carbon over to us. We get the carbon paper, and that's how we determine the cost of fisheries. So there's a lot of updating that needs to be done at the CFEC level, and we intend to do that. And I'll see if Commissioner Kelly has any comments.
I think he covered it well, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I have a question. On these pending cases that have had permits used, or the case has been pending for, say, 30 years, if the original individual that the case started with passes, does that permit pass on down to their whomever, their heirs or whatever? Or does it the case then... Is it absolved?
We actually have one case. It's pending before the Superior Court now, where the original plaintiff has passed away. So it's his estate that's appealing the case. They can continue to fish with the interim use permit, which they will continue to do, and continue to appeal the case. And their rights to fish are not extinguished until the case is resolved. So what we've done with the two of those cases, the Peterson case and the McGill case, we are working towards settlement of those cases to offer a time certain for interim use permits of, say, 3 to 5 years. And after that five-year period, their rights are extinguished if they agree not to appeal it beyond the Superior Court. And so two of those cases have been resolved since I've been there.
Oh, interesting. And just one moment, Mr. Eastman. I'd also, or Representative Eastman, excuse me, I'd also like to take a moment to note that we have Sylvan Robb, Department Director for the Department of Administration, here to answer questions. And we also have Kate Sheehan, Director of the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations from the Department of Administration, if there should be any questions that might be directed to them. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the Chair, now, as you look ahead to doing some of these studies that haven't been done in the past, does the current budget that you have give you enough resources to do those studies, or are you planning on coming back to us with an ask for more funding?
Recognizing that the state of Alaska is in some budget constraints, as we all are aware, We anticipate being able to do those within our current budget. I will, just to give you an idea of where we're at with the commission right now, we're allocated 22 employees. There used to be 45 employees at the commission. That gives you an idea of how they've downsized. We're allocated 22 employees, including 3 commissioners right now. One of the commissioner slots is vacant and will be a cost savings, as Representative Chenault had mentioned. Also, currently we have 13 employees, including 2 commissioners, or no, 15 employees, including 2 commissioners. So we're down to 13 employees. So we anticipate requests to hire to fill out the positions, particularly in the research section, which would be doing the optimum study. Currently, we have 1 director of that division and 1 economist. I think we need to beef up that particular section in order to move into the optimum number studies, but we can do it within the current budget that we currently have allocated for the commission.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? Representative Christ-Tompkins.
So circling back to my initial question, say optimum number studies are off the table, given that's how the commission has operated many of the last few decades and that is not pursued. How many years do you anticipate it will take the commission to resolve the outstanding cases? And were optimum number studies not to be conducted by the commission, would a sunset for the commissioner position seem reasonable to you after whatever period of time you think is reasonable to resolve these remaining initial issuance permit disputes?
Thank you, Representative Christ-Tompkins. And through the Chair, Fate Putman again. Well, I have read the legislative audits and Lawson report, and I think initially those questions were asked of the auditor and the, Tom Lawson, who did the Lawson report. Their conclusion was, in fact, that the commission could should continue to exist. One of the reasons it continues to exist is because of the autonomy of the commission to make difficult decisions and the fact that eventually all fisheries will be limited. So what we're trying to do through this piece of legislation is streamline the commission for this period of time in which we don't have or anticipate any closures, and maybe at some point in the future we will be back if we need to close a fishery and start limiting the number of permits that are out there. We may need a third commissioner. We don't anticipate this at this time, but that's what we're asking for in the reduction to two and the core and the operation of just potentially one commissioner. We may be able to function that way, but and I would leave this to Dale as well. She may have comments, but this commission, as I understand it, is very important to commercial fishing in the state of Alaska, and to have an immediate response to not having a permit and things of that nature, and the research that we do at the commission.
I think the other thing is the impartiality of the commissioners that don't have a vested interest in the fisheries that are making these decisions, as opposed to, say, taking it to the Department of Fish and Game or...
And actually, let me clarify that question, because I wasn't suggesting that the commission go anywhere. I was talking about the commissioners specifically and their hearing officers that can preserve that objectivity and impartiality. But I did want to re-ask the question, how many years you anticipate these remaining cases to take? Because that, I think, was the first part of my question.
Yeah, thank you, Faith Puppin, again, through the chair. It is my intent to resolve those by the next session. There are 13 cases, but I can explain it to you the way it's been explained to me. It's like one of those games with the wood blocks that you stack up, and as you pull out a wood block, everything's fine, but if you pull out the wrong one, the whole thing collapses. That's our concern, and it's certainly something we have to be aware of as we try to resolve these cases. My intent is to try to settle the cases like we did with these other two cases that are out there, to try to limit the use of the IUP going forward. That is the easiest way to resolve these outstanding cases. And these fishermen are in their 70s, and you know, with their families may want to fish. There may be reasons that they want to keep the appeal going, and we can't prevent that from happening.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Yes, through the chair. So now there's one thing that I don't quite understand. You know, if the administration was hard on getting these off the books and resolved, why would they, in your own words, you know, they've had lawyers and judges that have served on this and had all sorts of legal experience, and commissioners that have sat on the commission for a long time to bone up on all the particulars about some of these cases. If the goal is to eliminate these from the caseload, why do we have brand new commissioners now that are having to start almost from scratch and pick that up?
Representative Eastman, through the chair. Well, in this case, I was appointed to a vacant seat where the commissioner who served before me, a good friend of mine, Ben Brown, decided to move on to another job in the middle of his term. So I was appointed to the commission just 12 weeks ago. Also, unfortunately for us, the chairman of the commission, who served for 37 years on the commission, is also retiring. He retired as of March 1st, and that's the position that Dale Kelly, Commissioner Kelly, is serving in a four-year seat. So I'm only serving out an interim seat of 3 years, and then 4 years for Dale as we move forward. So as an answer to your question of why they're still there, I can explain it that way. I try to describe it's one of those games where you have to be very careful, and people that have come in this commission ahead of us have also struggled with these cases. There were 26 3 years ago. Now there are 13 left. And like I said, it's my intent to get through those 13 cases either through settlement or resolution before next session.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further questions from this committee?
Madam Chair.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, not so much a question as much as just a comment that I do think that the work done by the commission is important, and that it's important to have the separation in terms of what's happening at the department versus the commission versus the Board of Fish, and to the extent possible, depoliticize the decisions and make them really science-based. So I think that's really important. And I know in the Upper Cook Inlet, because of the pressure there, there has been talk of a buyback program and just as recently as this year. So that that function in the optimum studies, I think, is something that we really should consider, because a lot has changed in the 40 years. And I guess it's just a broader concern of what's happening with the budget right now, because it seems that in any instance where there's money that is coming in and not otherwise being used, there's an attempt to grab it. And, you know, and I don't think that's the right direction for this organization, for the specific reason that if there is something that needs to happen in the future, that those funds could be available to help with that process. So, I just have a little bit of concern, because we see that with the performance scholarship, we see that with PCE, we see any pot of money that's not otherwise obligated, kind of people looking to as a general fund source. So I just want to express that. I'll, support this bill today, and I appreciate the streamlining and efficiency, because, of course, we can always be doing things better. But I do think that as important as our fisheries are, that the mission is important, and want to see that retained.
Thank you.
Further comments?
Yeah.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
First of all, I'm really excited to hear about the resolution of the two. So I guess we've gone from 15 to 13 just in your last 2 weeks. So it seems like you're on a tear for knocking out these last 13, which seems to have been like the bugaboo that has haunted CFEC for a long time. And putting those to bed would be a real accomplishment. And so I wanted to be sure to put that on the record. The one question is, getting back to the optimum numbers, and the reason I'm returning this is it definitely opens my eyes and ears to hear that might be a renewed focus of the commission. Beyond the very infrequent instance in which there's a buyback and there's a huge amount of stakeholder buy-in and process behind that, are there plans afoot, or certain fisheries sort of next on the list for optimum number studies? How mature is this thinking or this planning?
If I could, Fate Putman again through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins. The reason I bring up optimum number studies is because there were two mandates from the legislature in 1975 when they set up the commission. The first mandate is to recommend to you legislation to enable the commission to regulate the fisheries, and that would be contained in our legislative report that we submit annually to the legislature. The second, only other thing we're required to do is optimum number studies. And we have, like I said, we've only done two or three of those, but it was mandated for us to do all those years ago. But as I can tell you, the commission seems to have been spending most of their time dealing with permit applications and adjudications, and hasn't gone to the optimum number studies. So that's why I bring it up. I can't say that there's specific fisheries in mind, but there are pressures on all fisheries where biomass reduces to the point where you need to do an optimum number study to determine if the right number of permits are in that fishery.
Could I hear Commissioner Kelly's thoughts on this as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, I'm going to fall back to the I'm newest a lot, because I've just been in there looking for a few days, and I absolutely understand the mandate of the limited entry law, and that it covers optimum numbers. I think it's important to me anyway that we really, if we're going to go down that path, that we do look at the prioritized, which fisheries really seem more likely, and sometimes you'll see fisheries that might intuitively feel like they're likely, but once you do the analysis, maybe not so much. So I guess I'm walking slow into the optimum numbers. I know over the years I've asked a lot of questions about optimum number studies at times, both wanting them and not wanting them. So I'd like to get Commissioner Putman's additional feedback, and we'll work through that. I don't want us to do them randomly. I want them to be a thoughtful process, and I think that certainly some fisheries would be great candidates, and for a lot of different pressures that are on them, and not always necessarily because there's a dearth of resource. We have, like I say, our salmon are dynamic. Every other species we have is as well. I think I heard in Representative Eastman's question, the funding, do you have enough to do that? Well, for limited optimum numbers studies, we probably do right now, but we could possibly, if you get into it whole hog, you're going to really need more money for that. And I would remind the committee that Limited Entry Commission is totally self-funded by the commercial fishing industry. There's no general fund money in it. They give millions of years to fish and game as a pass-through, which is totally appropriate for management of our resources. But I would also point out that you need some ability to do some of these tasks, the expectation, and kind of broaden or bring into the new age the Limited Entry Commission. And I think all of those things, optimum number studies, was in the initial original law, but I think they expected, as the commission evolved, for kind of the present circumstance to kind of dictate how that was implemented.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is fascinating. It's interesting. So when you're looking at, back to Representative Chris Tompkins, I think along that line, when you're looking at these optimal number studies, do you, because you stated that they're not funded with any UGF, they come from fishermen who pay fees for this that cover your costs. You haven't done any of these surveys that are you're mandated to, you know, in your charter. One of two things to do. So have you, what's the reason why you haven't done them? Do you feel that you're getting pressure from fishermen to not increase fees, that you they don't want to cover these costs, or is there a reason why you're not doing what you're required to be doing? I guess that's the question.
I bet I could answer that one.
Yeah,
they're both new.
Well, no, but I mean,
sure, I've got. May I speak
hold on.
That?
Okay.
But they know what they're doing. That's why they were appointed. They're familiar.
Ms. Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Newman, I think what I've seen over the years, and all I know is what I've seen and not really what all the internal discussion is that Limited Entry Commission has been really, really busy with 70 lawsuits. I mean, every time they turn around, for a few years there, they were getting massive lawsuits. And if, for instance, is the IRS wanting to seize fishing permits, which is a very dear issue to Alaska fishermen. And so they've had some really big thorny legal issues on top of adjudications and just the running of the commission. So I think my guess is, and from conversations over the years, is that there's just been other priorities that had to be addressed on the spot. And when it was time, and as on demand, people were asking for optimum numbers, through the Johns case, for instance, the court was demanding an optimum number study, they would get to them on demand versus go out and interrupt their other daily flow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think what we just did is speeded up the interview process for these two commissioners.
Right. Thank you. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair. Now, going back to this bill before us for a moment, I'm curious how an optimum number study is given its official finality by the commission. So you have staff that, you know, does some of the science, and you come together with a report. I assume that the commissioners, you know, have to vote that up or down or amend it. You know, what happens if one commissioner says, you know, 25 permits, the other one says 26? How do you, now that we're reducing down to two commissioners, how do you resolve that type of conflict?
That's a very good question, Representative Eastman. Our intent, of course, is to work on consensus. That is how Commissioner Kelly and I intend to operate going forward. But there could be times when there are differences of opinion on different things. And so in any situation where you have opposing points of view, there's a compromise point in between that two parties can negotiate to. So in this case, if it was a 30 versus 26, maybe we could settle on 28, something along those lines. So our intent is to try to cooperatively make decisions on things such as optimum number studies, if that helps. And on the issue of the budget, we bring in approximately $8 million a year into CFEC through fees. Every fisherman is out there, whether they're in a limited fishery or an open fishery, gets a fishing license from the commission. They need to pay for that. And at the back end, we charge 0.4% of the value of the landings in an open fishery or 0.4% of the value of the permit in a closed fishery. Those numbers bring in about $8 million a year. I would say a third of that is used by the commission roughly, and two-thirds is used by the Department of Fish and Game for studies out in the field to determine the biomass and return rate of salmon and other fisheries that they investigate. And I'm not a real expert in that. I know Kelly is. So Commissioner Kelly, do you have any comments on that?
Madam Chair, just roughly that on average in recent years have been about $5 million have gone to Fish and Game for all various purposes to implement their program. But again, on optimum number studies, right now the research section at Limit Entry has two people. So it's the burden that would be placed on them. We probably need some help if we went full bore on optimum numbers.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to report HB 231, that's GH1053-D, out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note that will be updated in the Finance Committee.
Thank you. Do you have an objection?
Objection for purpose of discussion.
We've already had our discussion.
Well, we were allowed to ask questions, but we never actually got around to having comments.
Okay. Representative Eastman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's two different tracks that we're kind of going down. We're kind of trying to do them both at the same time, and I'm not entirely sure that they're heading in the same direction. On the one hand, we're trying to reduce costs at the commission. We're trying to streamline. We're trying to reduce, you know, excess commissioners. But then we're also trying to, at least from the commissioner's perspective, we're trying to accomplish things the commission hasn't been doing recently or ever. And we're trying to resolve cases. And it would seem to me that having now an even number of commissioners is what I would do if I wanted to slow down and put a brake on the process of resolving some of those cases and expanding and doing some of these studies. So it may be short, in the short term, it may be more efficient to have two commissioners. But I think if our job is to get the work done, and maybe the legislature needs to relook at what the job is that we're asking the commission to do, but if we're trying to get them to do it quickly and efficiently, an even number of commissioners is probably not the way I would go about doing it.
Thank you. Anybody else have any comments from this committee? See, Representative Christ Tompkins.
I'm excited about the legislation, and I know it's been a couple years in the coming. There have been a lot of iterations from the chair's office and the administration, and I'm glad to see these suite of reforms that retain the independence of the commission, save some money. Ultimately, hopefully that money can return to the commercial fishing industry with additional support to commercial fisheries division, and so it seems like a win all the way around, and I'm excited to see this go forward.
I will echo your comments. I'm really excited to see the CFEC becoming streamlined, effective, and efficient. And I understand that previously, you know, there's been a lot of hurdles to overcome, and a majority have been overcome by previous commissioners, and now we've got some fresh eyes taking a fresh look, and I think that that's always helpful. So seeing no objections,
I withdrew my objection. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Eastman. We will move House Bill 231 from committee with all attached notes and potential fiscal notes. Thank you. And as amended. Thank you. Anyway, that concludes our business for today. Our next hearing will be at 10 a.m. on Thursday, March 8th, at which time we will be hearing House Bill 354, Dive Fishery Assessments, and House Bill 379, Commercial Fishermen's Fund Vessel Owner Claims, sponsored by Representative Ortiz, as well as confirmation hearings. So we will be seeing once again Ms. Kelly, Commissioner Potential Ms. Kelly, and Commissioner Putnam. So we will look forward to seeing you on Thursday. Seeing no further business to come before this committee, we will adjourn at 11:03.